This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 21st of October, 1953. The title of this lecture is Liabilities of Being Processed. This tape is 56 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions. Please note, this tape ends abruptly, as did the original master recording.
This is October the 21st, first morning lecture. And we are trying to cover now the liabilities incident to being processed. I want you to keep your eye open for the various liabilities of these techniques. There are some whenever you get upstairs into tremendously workable processes. You are operating so close to the rules of life itself that when you use the process, you are overriding, but grandly, the self-determinism of your freakler. Now, his determinism is maybe to just sit tight and stay inside, nice and close as he can approximate it, and be at a nice, acceptable level of illness. And he may be there being processed by you solely and completely because, quote, he has been driven to this by what they have done to him, unquote. And all he's doing is demonstrating how bad off he is, and if he can simply offer to you how bad off he is all set. And then you up and completely upset his apple cart, dump apples all over the street, by completely changing either his frame of reference or his modus operandi. There isn't a single thing that will come to you for processing, bringing along an old or young or slightly decayed body, who does not have one thing wrong with him above all other things. He's a motivator hungry. Now, you wouldn't say this. Bodies can be overt hungry, and they can be motivator hungry, but a thetan can only be one thing. He can only be motivator hungry, because there's nothing you can do to a thetan. And yet he can actually engage in overt acts. There isn't anything much you can do to him. You throw him in a potato trap for 18,000 years to fish him out, and he changes his mind a couple of times and he's on his way. So he gets the idea from bodies that he, and from Christianity and from the messed universe and from other places, that he ought to have bad things happen to him in order to atone for, be forgiven for, account for, balance the register. Of course, this is an automatic process. The moment he moves into using facsimiles at all, he has, of course, the problem on his hands that he mustn't use any of his own strength to go forward. So therefore, he will hand out and try to fit on to his acts the facsimiles which account for it. Well, this is an impossible proceeding. None of the facsimiles fit. The answer to Q is A, and these never exactly fit. And so he is always left with something left over, and he's been for about 74 trillion years at least, usually. He's had this one, this little bit left over, on every single overt act he's done. There is a residue then on the motivator that he's received, and a residue on the overt act he's received. And his main problem, of course, is residue. Now, what is the basic overt act motivator sequence, or dead-dead-ex sequence of the thing? What is it? What thing has he made his first overt act against? It's space. And what was his overt act against space? Collapsing it. It isn't an overt act against space to enlarge it. But it is an overt act against space, just as an item, just like you'll see somebody bump into or get mad at a fire plug and then kick the fire plug. You see, that's the same idea. Just because you don't do that anymore, there's no reason why you don't have the impulse to. You've just learned that it's no use to attack the physical universe. But you're totally cognizant of the fact that you can make an overt act or can commit an overt act against a physical object or the mesh universe. And so it is on our first entrance in, the first overt act against this universe happens to be an overt act concerning the implosion of space. So after that, the Thetan tries to get himself a dead X continually. See, nobody imploded his space, really. Tries to get a dead X, and he works hard to get this dead X. And the dead X, of course, winds him up in imploding. And so he gets smaller and smaller. Totally mechanical. Doesn't anything thinking about it. He's collapsed a lot of space. So when he collapses space, then his space has to be collapsed. Now he'll tell you that he was sitting there in his universe and something came along and imploded all of his space. And this is his story and he's stuck with it. But if you watch very carefully, his case doesn't resolve well when you run it this way. He is parasitic, he thinks, on mesh universe space. He's always reducing space. There's two things you can do with space. One is to fill it all up full of stuff. That's an overt act. And the other one is to pull it into nothingness, which is no space at all, by merely sending its anchor points in with a crash. Now, he has collapsed more space than has been collapsed on him. So he is trying to collapse his own space in order to get a dead X. He doesn't have enough facsimiles to collapse his space. Truth is, nobody really can collapse his space, so he's got to mock it up. When you start hitting this button, you'll find that the recognition of the pre-clear on this horrible fact of nothing can be done to him, and really his space can't be collapsed either. You'll find, by the way, that he can put out all the anchor points and flitter he wants. You can take the most occluded case that you've ever run into, and you'll say, put out a flitter. He will. He'll sit there and put it out for half an hour. You'd say, why, gee whiz, this would make a fellow well. No, it doesn't. It makes him kind of unhappy, but he goes on putting out flitter. That's very strange, isn't it? You want to make that test. Just ask somebody or yourself. Well, why don't you do it right now? Just get the idea of putting out flitter. Gold sparks. You can do it. But there's nothing much to it. Good. All right. There's nothing impeding his going on and operating except the idea that he ought to be punished. Well, that's an idea he's bought from the mesh universe itself, because that's about all the mesh universe does. Okay. Anybody fail to put out flitter? Didn't put out any flitter? Well, you can put out flitter if you want to. Maybe you don't quite know what flitter is. Flitter is just gold sparks that you just send out in various directions. It's very easy. That's just anchor points. Every one of those is an anchor point. All right. When we deal then with our Thetan, we find out that he's trying to crowd down into one space and keep fixed in one space. And this is a tough trick. It isn't a tough trick to expand. It's a tough trick to collapse. And that's your dead X on collapsing space. Well, this Thetan, for various reasons or other, also wants to make everything into him. It's a basis on, you find that you run teeth this way. It's the most gorgeous setup you ever want to get into in your life. You just start making teeth. You get this PC to start mocking up teeth, mocking up teeth, mocking up teeth, mocking up teeth, mounds of teeth, piles of teeth, not doing anything with them. If you just run through that exercise with just more and more teeth, you'll all of a sudden, you'll get a little impulse there, and you can foster along by saying, now start turning trees into teeth. Now turn something else into teeth. Now something else into teeth. Now something else into teeth. Now something else into teeth. And if you work at this, it takes about a little while, but if you used to work at this, all of a sudden you get this weird feeling, whee! Let's turn everything into teeth. There we go. That's our big mission. It's really, really wonderful. Now you can do this with a pre-clear. You start mocking up a body and mocking up a body and mocking up a body and mocking up a body. Now if you take other people, mock up other people's bodies and then turn them into his body, we just keep doing this and doing it and doing it and doing it, we get the same feeling. Whee! Let's turn everything in the world into the shape of this body. That's his idea of randomity, is to make it all the same. Well, anyway, we take space. And he's worked around with space. That's his first opponent. He found himself in space, and there's various things you can do with space. You can fill it. You can empty it, you can explode it, and you can implode it. Well, actually, the only real overt act against space is to implode it. Paul's anchor points down, bam. And then it isn't there anymore, because that is an overt act against space. That's the destruction of space, pulling its anchor points. All right, how on God's green earth can you get this fellow with the idea that he has to have all these dead X's, all these acts back against himself, into a state of mind whereby he's willing to get well? His willingness to get well is right there on that pin. He could only get well if he could work out enough dead X's to collapse enough space. He's motivated. He wants to be shot full of holes, one way or the other, in such a way as to collapse all his space. He's hungry for implosions then, and he isn't liable to give one up pretty easily. Now, how does this come about mechanically in terms of motion? From point A in space to point B in space is one course of the particle. A complete communication would then make the particle go from point B back to point A. When you have point A to point B, 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 you just keep this up, see, and nothing, point B to point A, point B to point A, point B to point A, you get a one-way flow or a stuck flow, which is the energy mechanism underlying your overt acts and motivators. Now, if he has thrown flow at space, which is to pull in his anchor points, and 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 to pull in his anchor points, he's got a stuck flow on pulling in the anchor points of space. Which, of course, he can only answer by running it out as pulling in the anchor points of space, pulling in the anchor points of space, pulling in the anchor points of space himself, of his own space. Very mechanical. So if he keeps running this over, he will run it out. You see how he can go about it? He just run it out by doing it himself. He's done it to the lot of space that he's found lying around. And so the next point is, he's got to do it himself. You see how this would be? He's had all of these implode. Now, if you get every anchor point, you're supposed to have a point zero at the center of space, center of the cube space, and we number the corners of the space 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. We've got the vectors 1 to 0, 2 to 0, 3 to 0, 4 to 0, 5 to 0, 6 to 0, 7 to 0, 8 to 0. Those vectors are the implosion vectors. Now, if he keeps running this and running and running, he keeps going around collapsing everybody's space and collapsing his space and collapsing this universe space, after a while he said, what he's trying to do now, he starts to get the idea of going from zero out to one, zero to two, zero to three, zero to four. See, he'll unimplode things rather than explode. He'll unimplode. Well, the only way he can do that is to approximate it himself. See, and start throwing it out. And you get the basic mechanics, or some of the basic mechanics of the overt act motivator sequence, just in that it has to do with a communication, one-way flow in a communication. Well, if Thetan will try to do this any day of the week. And so what he's got to do is push from zero out to the spaces, he thinks, in order to undo this weighty problem of space. And then somebody comes along and tells him that there's badness or goodness connected. It's his ideas that float above all these mechanical reasons, which are up into the upper postulate, not the lower postulate range. The lower postulate is merely derived from observing energy. Upper postulate simply derived. Nothing to it. Their cause. All right. Was there any action prior to the mesh universe which you have to take into account as an auditor? Because on this implosion of space, your Thetan has gone around and found other Thetans who had their space all beautifully fixed up. And it was a case of, I'll blow and I'll blow and I'll blow your house in. Because what could you do to some other Thetan? Pull up his anchor points. That's all. Pow! A lot of fun. Pow! Well, forgiveness and feeling sorry for are an interesting mechanism. You run implosions and explosions just about so long, I'm pretty clear. And by the way, you can simply get into changing motion and he blows all this up. It's an upper level technique. I mean, you can just get him changing from point to point on certainty, but he's changing from these two points. You create enough concept of energy so he'll blow it all up and start all over again. He just will do this. But if you're going to take this apart in terms of understanding what is bogging him down, it is this fact that he, being with you today, has imploded more other spaces than his own space has been imploded. As a consequence, he is motivator hungry on imploding space. He wants to be hurt. Well, I say, there's another mechanism for this. There's forgiveness. Oh, that's a wonderful mechanism. Every once in a while you have a pre-clear just burst out into a flying tropical storm of tears on just the idea that nobody will ever forgive them. Well, that's just about as factual and beautiful and so forth as a very large wolf with a somewhat mangy hide who has been eating human beings for a long time, sitting down and weeping large tears because nobody will feel sorry for him. Why does he want somebody to feel sorry for him? Now let's look at the basis of that. Is they forgive him and so forth. Let's look at the basis of this. How do you run out of sympathy for a dead man? That's an interesting thing, because dead men have been around your pre-clear demanding sympathy endlessly, on and on and on. How do you ever run out? Well, sympathy is just what it says. Same vibration as, which means the same force and shape and motion as. Now, you can do this right now where you're sitting. I'll give you an idea of this. All right? Just mark up a dead man out in front of you, demanding sympathy. A dead man. All right? Mock up yourself alongside of the dead man as dead in the same form and shape as the dead man. See that? That's sympathy. And that's how you run sympathy for a dead man. It's absolutely impossible to run sympathy for a dead man while you're walking around live and upright. And if the weight on you and the man on you is very heavy, to be sympathetic toward a sick person, you've got a little less of a weight there, but the sick person is lying in bed. Now mark up a sick person lying in bed, all decayed and caved in. Now how do you feel sympathy for the sick person? Just mark up yourself exactly the same way on a bed lying alongside. And you got it. Now you wonder why some of your pre-clears are walking around in a bad state of disrepair. Well, there's a lot of things that can happen to them, but that is the basic one. People have demanded sympathy of them. Now, sympathy is, you know very well, an emotion. Well, it's a distance of looking. But you have to look exactly like the other person in order to sympathize with them. And there you have sympathy. Now, by the way, I don't give you this as a technique. I merely give you this as an observation of the mechanics of life. How does your thinking slow other people down? But to a walk, but to a crawl, and unto death. He simply says, be sympathetic, while holding his mangled paw. He says, be sympathetic. Please be sympathetic. Poor me. And the only possible way that the sympathy can be exactly approximated is for another Thetan to swing around and go into exactly the same position, sensation, form, and distance. Relative distances within the thing. The next time you see somebody demanding sympathy from you, just walk yourself up alongside them. Exactly the same situation. You will have given them sympathy. There is the way to give sympathy. This is a very dirty trick, because if you're up tone scale and you do this five or six times, you've given them exactly what they thought they wanted, but they will find it inedible. Because the terminals will collapse one after the other. And then, if you were to mock yourself up in the coincident space they have, demanding sympathy, they would all of a sudden start to operate in your frame of reference. They would flip into your form and change. You get the idea of how this would be. This is actual mechanics, way to hell and gone back on track. Came around and, oh boy, this fellow, he said, I really had the most horrible thing happen to me. Was I betrayed? Oh, was I betrayed? And so on. Feel sympathy for me. The other guy, of course, in order to feel sympathy for it, simply would go into that more or less automatic reaction. We call off base, automatic reaction. What happens to the guy that feels sympathy for it? He is instantly betrayed. Why? He's feeling sympathy for betrayal. So he has to mock himself up as betrayed. And then you can eat him up. Neat trick. Very palatable energy. There's various animals in the animal kingdom will carry out this same program. They do it for various reasons. We needn't go into the entire anthropology of all life, however, to demonstrate this. This is merely necessary for you. Can you think of a member of your family that always wanted sympathy? All right, mock them up there wanting sympathy. Now mock yourself up alongside of them and then turn yourself exactly into their form and shape. So you got two. See this? Now do it again. Get this person, mock them up. Now mock them up in their most trying hour. Now mock yourself up alongside of them. And turn yourself into them. You see that technique? And by the way, that technique is tremendously interesting and educating. It's not a process. It's just a method of demonstrating the mechanism of life. Now the funny part of it is I have run a preclear on testing this back when I was investigating it. I run a preclear on testing it for about 25 hours. Grind. Boy, was this person in horrible shape when I finished. I took all the people who were dead in his present lifetime and kept mocking him up alongside of him. Oh, the avidity with which he would suddenly slip into that deathbed. Oh, pam, pam, pam. And then all of a sudden these locks would turn up when he was a little child having his head half beaten off by the same person. See, they were the winning balance. And so when they went down into the grave, so did he, because they were the winning balance. Now the winning balance was dead. And this is very confusing. But you feel that if you could only feel enough sympathy for him, you could feed him enough, they come back to life. And so a dependency is answered by trying to give them enough energy so that they can continue. And that is the way it is done. A thetan never really thinks to himself, you know, I haven't got any energy to spare. He just says he thinks this. He always has energy to spare. But the way he has equated his existence depends upon his ideas about overt acts and motivators. And his basic motivator, then, is I've got to be collapsed. So you find people going into a state of collapse rather easily. He's got to be imploded. He's got to be betrayed. Not ridiculed. This one he doesn't buy at all. But it's much worse than being betrayed. Because that's coming along and having somebody stretch out your anchor points and hold them out away from you there, you see. And just keep holding them so that you can't implode. Which means you can never be forgiven. It's unforgivable to be ridiculed. See? You can never be forgiven if you can't get your anchor points in and implode. See that? If I can't collapse, in other words, I can't be forgiven. That's the way the quote, thinkingness turns out. I have to collapse to be forgiven. I have to implode to be forgiven. I can't explode, never be forgiven. You see, he's still trying to run out collapsing space. So this indicates a technique to you, which is a workable technique, on the subject of space. Now put a cube of space up in front of you. Just mark up a little cube of space any old way. Now mark up yourself alongside of the cube as a thing. Now turn it into the same kind of a cube as the first cube. turn yourself into the same kind of cube's first cube. I throw that away. I'll take another cube of space, which has been imploded. Now mark up yourself alongside of it and turn yourself into an imploded piece of space. Now that is one method of getting motivators. One method of, you feel sympathy for space, so you implode. You feel sympathy for space and implode and feel sympathy for space. In other words, be the same as, same mock-up as space in imploded space. See how this is? That is not the most workable technique in the world, but that is a method of getting motivators. Motivator hunger. There are many other ways of doing it. And that is, you mock yourself up in any kind of, you're a free player, mock yourself up in any kind of form. Any kind of form you can think of. And then have him turn into a thing. Go ahead and do that. You'll see the reaction of it. Any, mock up somebody you know in any form you can think of and then turn him into a thing. Same way you are, as a thing. Now you got some kind of an idea why some preclears are hard to exteriorize. And why some auditors will practically do anything rather than keep from exteriorizing a preclear. You see? Basically, very simple. You wouldn't do that. That's a mean trick. So, what you do is have your preclear mocking himself up as being turned into an imploded thetan by other thetans and spaces all over the shop. You just have space imploding him, and space imploding him. Have him be all set up and beautified and so forth, and then get him imploded. All set up and beautified, get him imploded. Doesn't matter much whether he does a good job of getting imploded or not. This is motivator hunger. I will actually work out motivator hunger.
This lecture is continued on side 2 of this cassette.
Now once in a while you work in with a case that doesn't move rapidly enough to suit you. They're slowed down somewhere or another. Give them some motivator. You can do any kind of motivator to them you want. Any kind. Get them hit with baseball bats, get them hit with bullets and bombs, get them, so on. But the best kind of motivator to run into is an implosion. And if you can get them imploded, which is to say betrayed, one way or the other way, you're all set. And you'll get them over a bump or two. And all of a sudden, a lot of things will turn up. But what is this mechanism of sympathy? Your second reaction, your reaction every time a thetan is offered a shape or form is for the thetan to take the shape or form. And every time he's offered something that can change its shape or form, he has an impulse to change it into his shape or form. You see, he just has just these two impulses he's operating on, which are almost immediate. That's why you get motivated hunger. He's just done this more times to others than it's been done to him. Okay. Now it is all essentially very simple. The hand is not even quicker than the eye. If you want to get anybody starved, getting real hungry, so forth, why, just start an exercise having to do with turning his stomach into the things he eats. You'll put up his stomach and turn it into the things he eats. Put up his stomach and turn it into a brick of ice cream. Take his stomach and turn it into something else. A beefsteak. Take his stomach and turn it into something else. Why? He is impeded from eating vast quantities of things because his stomach is motivator hungry. This is stomach trouble. When we've said that, we've said all there is to know about stomach trouble. He's motivator hungry, that's all. Any organ that is out of order is motivator hungry. the basic motivator is then collapsed space, or collapsed space which is re-released. Second stage of collapse, you know, it goes in, boom, and then goes out again to go in, boom, again. Well, you'll see people hitting this second stage, and they'll be actually look like they're exploding. Actually, they're just on the second implosion. Out and in, out and in. All right, we have then a very simple process here for the immediate cure-up of various organs of the body. The stomach, of course, has eaten, oh, by, I don't know, 10 to the billionth power, more than it's been eaten. Otherwise, it wouldn't be sitting there as a stomach. It's as follows. Every day it is guilty of the destruction of God knows how many billions of live beings. Well, you see, when I spoke of stomachs, I also speak of teeth. Because your stomach, throat, teeth, well, the entire genital urinary system, in addition to that, fall into the same category. They all have received, have done more overt acts than they have received motivators, and so their books aren't balanced. You want to balance somebody's books for them, you'll get processing. Very often the case is sort of hung up on this and very concerned with it, and you want to do something about it. This doesn't mean that this won't resolve on a higher type of space and change processing. Well, I'm talking to you about still a subjective level of technique, you see. But it'll resolve on the upper one. But as you work change processing, you will all of a sudden run into this. So you'd better do it subjectively a few times to prove it to yourself, know that it exists and can exist, because you're going to run into it with the dullest crash you ever heard when you start change processing. And some case that you're changing from one place to another, motion, you know, you're speeding up his motion, will start to run through this gamut and practically blow to pieces. And he will blow to pieces with enough velocity, that is to say, or start to blow to pieces with enough velocity, so that he'll get in real, real perilous condition as far as he's concerned with his GE. Now we go on to the second part of this morning's lecture, which is simply that your poor GE should be the name of it. As long as we had techniques which didn't particularly magnify and Thetan up to a level where he was throwing around very much active energy, we were all right. As far as G was concerned, the G could survive with ease. Thetan little beam didn't bother much. But if Thetan's left to get careless, particularly about those things he's not particularly afraid of. And if Thetan is no longer afraid of his body, he can handle it with great ease. He sometimes gets rather careless of it. He reaches too close to it or something of the sort. Well, now, a Thetan should know something about what can happen to a body without having to have it happen in terms of experience. It's simply this. The body is bridged together with affinity. As long as it is bridged together with something vaguely approximating the wavelength of affinity, bridged, I say, molecule to molecule, joined together, it would be messed molecules embedded in ridges of affinity. As long as it is hung together this way, and left fairly well so that its cellular beingness and thinkingness and so forth can go on a fairly decent level of evolution and growth and to discharge of products and so forth, it is about the most indestructible machine you ever heard of. It is just fabulous. They have to take hammers and saws and everything else to it in hospitals to make it go out of order. I think it is practically impossible to throw a body completely out of order unless one goes up toward operating Thetan and simply starts taking one apart. You have automobiles, wrecks, train wrecks. My God, what bodies will survive? They survive their legs being cut off and their heads busted in half and so forth. And, Every once in a while in a war or something like that, you can understand how the body would go by the boards. It's been in a submarine or something of the sort without air for about 5 days and so on. And somebody goes down and picks them up, and my God, if there's one alive yet, that's impossible. It isn't really any... The wonder is not that bodies can survive this universe. The universe is rugged enough. The actual wonder is that the body is so confoundedly indestructible. There's only one thing that will put it really back together again, and one thing that will take it apart. That thing which can put a body back together again observably can't take it apart, right? And that's an operating thing with beams and horsepower. It can really take them apart. But it's the only thing that put them back together. You can take pills, and you can take all sorts of things, and hot baths, and sitz baths and spitz baths and masseurs and sewers and every other doggone thing, and nothing much will happen to the body. People can crack its bones and pop its muscles and do all sorts of things with it. Nothing much happens to it. Well, Thetan gets back there and starts to patch it up one way or the other, and his beam slips and he blows the ridge over in some other direction. Now, it's always best to have your Thetan then, your preclear, patch up his body early in processing. He's still interested in it. And have him do his patch up then, because he's liable to get so doggone much horsepower. But a little bit later, you say, why don't you patch up that leg? And there's a resounding series of explosions all up and down the leg. And then real flashes. I mean, you can feel it as an auditor. And then he has to go laboriously to work to get deposits of energy to put them in the right places and patch them up and make it all work again. What's he blowing up? There are two things which these bodies are held around with. One is love and the other is hate. That's affinity. They're patched together with affinity. Well, there has to be a tiny ingredient of dislike, or the body doesn't stay together at all. But if it's total admiration, it would simply melt apart. So you take somebody who's complaining to you that he feels in terrible condition and his chest feels all soft, or his face or his head feels soft, or something like that. He's just been admired too much or loved too much in his own family. That's all. I mean, he'll tell you quite the contrary, but he actually had a terrific amount of affection handed to him in his life, and it's practically melted him down. You get the idea. Most people don't have this trouble. The other fellow who can't seem to change his facial structure, and there's hard ridges and so forth around, he's just been hated too much. And he's hated too many things. Too much hate. And hate is a hard ridge. And you try to blow this thing down, and boy, he gets into passionate vibes about things and so forth. Why is a Thetan? He can simply get back. He doesn't even have to wrap a beam around it to make it melt. He just says, no hate in this ridge, and melt. Gone. Because that was always holding it together. I mean, it'll melt awful quick. In fact, it'll melt too quick sometimes. A body which is in poor condition has been interbridged by antipathetic sentiments. It has had ridges introduced into it which it can't use adequately and can't adequately get around in its normal course of action. People are taught to hate parts of their body, and they go out of communication with them. They are taught to love parts of their body, and these parts they melt away. And the other parts become anesthetic and like stone. People are taught to hate the sexual part of the body by Christianity. And they're taught to love the soul or something, only nobody ever quite anatomized the soul. They're taught to love a kindly face and so on. That's a rough deal. What is the liability of a Thetan on an operating level in handling a body? It's actually only in sudden, unreasonable, you might say, he's not reasoning, but sudden dislikes and revulsions for it. It makes him cut and been impatient with it. He hasn't any idea how much horsepower he's got till he's seen it work. You'll find some things have quite an impulse. Say they put out a beam that looks like a hand and pass it through people's necks. And this wonderful idea, there's a bunch of ridges shattered and all sorts of things start going to pieces. So, and then the guys might be amazed because the body itself has so many old deposits of energy, being all out of present time and so forth. It's quite an explosive quality. It has an enormous amount of emotion in it. So nobody should really fool around with trying to do something to a body unless he knows how to disconnect. You give him a disconnection drill and put a beam on something, then take the beam off. Put the beam on, take it off. On, off, on, off, on, off, on, off, on, off. Disconnection. In other words, there's no reason why you should get a kickback. As a matter of fact, there's no reason he should use a beam. But if he does, let him be able to disconnect. Now he should, if he's going in for any sort of thing, he should be up to a point where he isn't handling his body with beams. You don't handle bodies with beams unless you want them just totally automatic. And that's like putting a wind-up motor in a little toy that walks around on the floor or something of that sort. You wind them up and they run. We can always do that by putting a few ridges around and then energizing the ridges. But even then, they energize those ridges after you put them there. You don't need beams. Now a fellow gets impatient. Something is getting in his rotor. He can't go someplace fast enough or something of the sort. And he is actually liable to get antagonistic toward his body. And you will get people who have simply clipped their bodies. Accidentally or on purpose. The body was in the road when they went through the road. and they hurt themselves. This is quite pertinent to me right now. It's brought it up why I wanted to mention it to you. Because you're going to run into it, whether you like it or not. The first time when you get into trouble with the body will be when you're shifting in and around the head and you start blowing up these terrific little, oh, this terrific maze, a rather pretty little lace works of ridges that go through the skull. And you start blowing those things up. Well, they aren't there for any terrific purpose. They do this and that, but they're not needed. But they're very painful when they blow. And somebody will hit these one way or the other in his head, or you'll suddenly think of the wrong thing or something, or throw the beam in the wrong direction at them, and there'll be pity pop, potty pop, 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 potty pop, pop, crack, 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 potty pop, 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 all through his skull and his throat, something on that order. Boy, he gets awful gun-shy if he's not up on an operating level. He thinks you did it, or you look accusatively at you as an auditor or something. He doesn't realize that he set these off himself because he doesn't want to take responsibility for having hurt his own body. But he did it. And every once in a while, you, in trying to help out some preacher or something of the sort, may stupidly enough put out a beam or something and start to take off one of these ridges with which they're struggling. You know, you just get impatient and you say, what the hell's he having all this trouble for? Pap! And the ridge goes, pow! Then he looks at you accusatively, the foolish fellow, and says, you did it. Of course you did. Nothing like that. And you say, oh, this, what this operation is. They think they have a scarcity of attention and a scarcity of action simply because they own the body. And they stay in the run. And they stay in the agreement of the society enough to keep this body activated continually. Never occurs to them, for instance, to have the body go and take a rest every day or something of the sort. Never occurs to them to let the body sleep a long period of time. You'll be utterly amazed, but anybody who's operating at all well has something on the order of 6 to 8 hours out of every 24, at least that. Completely free. Just but completely, he just puts the body to bed, which is the only reason I know of why bodies sleep. Started out this way, and then Thetans forgot this was what they were doing. Now you put the body in bed, and it goes to sleep, and you're on your way. And there's an automatic mechanism that puts the body to sleep right in the skull. All Thetans got to do is squeeze it or shut it or something of the sort. He's all set. Body will go to sleep. body wake up some morning. Well, the body's convinced, of course, it needs to sleep because it's got such a mechanism installed in it. You will find that it is rare that a Thetan will make such a gross error as to blow up bridges by accident. That's rare after he's operating well, so forth. But even then, once in a while, a sudden rush on the part of an automobile coming down the street while his body's walking across the street, something like that. A sudden incoming swish and a horn blow or something, and he'll reach for the body without omitting. Well, he won't omit the beam. He'll just reach for the body and drag it up on the curb or something of the sort, and then repair the damages afterwards. And there'll be pop, pop, boom. He'll bow some essential ridges or something. So, well, the fact of the matter is, it's almost impossible to knock one of these bodies flat. A body is the doggonest, most persistent piece of machinery that anybody ever ran into. The darndest things can happen. But the Thetan can heal it up rather well, and one of the ways he heals it up is, of course, the way you should process chronic somatics and preclear. We get into exteriorization the first moment we get into being serious about making people well. There isn't any other way which is highly stable, guaranteed, and fast. I just don't know of any other way to make the body well except to use the only therapeutic agent the body has, the being himself. The being himself can step outside the body and repair little energy deposits and changes of structure and so forth with fair speed. And the main reason a lot of pre-clears don't fix themselves up after they've been stepped one and so forth is I guess they just are too curious about other things, or they're too worried about themselves as a thing to give much thought to it. But sooner or later, they'll sit down for a few hours and go over it very painstakingly. And they'll straighten out all the little energy odds and ends on the optic nerves, and straighten out the endocrine system instead of letting it go boom and crash, try to do something with it. Now, a thing who is not in terribly good condition would rather do it by thinking about it, of course, rather than looking for it, and they'd rather run a concept. Now, you can cater that if you want to. The guy will get well one way or the other, the curse will come off the injury with a concept, or he'd rather run a mock-up, which is an approximation. But you're asking him to pervade an area when he does this. So the only real therapeutic agent the body has is the preclear himself as a thing. And the way we got into healing with regard to this is because a step one can reach into his body, to use a non-descriptive phrase, that's not a good phrase, and straighten up the various odds and ends. Now, how do you do this with a preclear? You say, is there anything you'd like to fix up about your body? He lifts it over. Any little pinched nerves or wound up muscles or ridges on various items and so forth around, anything about the endocrine system. And he'll just start looking. He'll get quite interested. He'll patch up this and patch up that. Yes, this is better. Yes, that's better. Well, it's hard for an auditory to credit who hasn't done this yet. It's very hard for an auditory to credit that anything has happened to the body until the guy doesn't complain about it anymore. The condition does seem to be remedied, but nothing happened. You know, he didn't do anything dramatic, like hauling out and walking up a saw or a hammer or chisel or anything. Didn't do anything dramatic. It's too easy to adjust the body this way. Now, could an individual still inside of his body adjust the body in the same fashion? Yes, but he has to know something. One little trick. When he is inside of his body, he tries to reach the various areas of the body with energy. He's reaching too short a distance, and he's activating too many ridges interiorly. So he doesn't get there, and he doesn't have clear perception because he can't look that close up. The only real reason the inside of a body is dark is because it's too near to look at. That's about all. It's this wrong wavelength. So he starts reaching beams around inside the body while he's still inside the body. He activates ridges. They blow up. He hasn't got any long change of position, you see, from A to B. The A to B of the communication beam is too short for the type of energy present. You see, outside the body, he could mock up a beam which would be right for some other condition, but there isn't approximating energy present. He then is relatively unable to handle his body from inside unless he runs reach and withdraw as a formula. Now, he can run reach and withdraw as a formula and knock out knees up bridges. Don't neglect that one, because there's some guy that doesn't exteriorize easily and you don't want to go on very far with him. He's got a very painful stomach. We're just getting reach and withdrawing for his stomach. Stop reach and withdrawing for him. Painful way. That's too easy. Now, the next thing that you have a fellow do who is interiorized, if you want him to work on his body, so forth, is have him lock up the beam that he's going to use to fix it up as emanating from some exterior point from the body back to the body again. See that? He's reaching back toward himself. He can do all sorts of things. He can push things out of his eyes and push things out of his teeth that are caught in his teeth. And he can adjust heart actions and so forth just by reaching from way outside the body into the body and adjusting it. See, he just mocks up the beam as having its A way outside the body and its B inside the body. If you practice with this for a little while, you'll see exactly how this works. You shouldn't do too much of it because he's inside the body and he's liable to lock up a real hefty beam from outside the body in. He'll tell you at first that he can't lock up any beams at all. That's an impossibility. But he is able to do so. He's liable to lock up a real hefty beam and blow a ridge. Pow! And he's inside the body then, and he isn't in any condition to go and repair ridges. There's a lot of things that you could do with that. But where a fellow just won't do anything for himself, or the world seems to be walking over him in all directions, the world has a permission to. The world has permission to walk all over him because he doesn't deserve to be helped. Well, that is motivator hunger. And he's just hungry to have his space collapsed, his space collapsed, his space collapsed, his space collapsed. Everybody collapsing his space one way or the other is a thing. Everybody coming along and turning him as a Thetan into everything else is another motivator. But the main motivator that he will accept is going blind. Going blind, collapsing space, you know, looking as condensed feeling. Well, so therefore collapsing space and going blind are the same thing. So he will take motivators as going blind, as well as motivators collapsing spaces. They're the same operation. Therefore, a fellow who's motivator hungry manifests himself as an unseeing thing. If he exteriorizes at all, he has an entitlement. So he's unseeing. He's blind. I'm blind, he said. You can walk over me. I've done so many horrible things. So whether he has or not is beside the point. That's the way he looks at it. All right. With regard to processing at large, I want you to continue your study of objective and subjective techniques and comparison thereof. But today, I want you to see if you can't make a little test on a reach and withdraw inside the body. That's a neat little technique. And we don't have enough cases that are really really show it. But get somebody to get the effort of reaching and withdrawing inside the body toward any old or new chronic somatic. The fellow says, well, I had a chronic somatic once. Well, I'm getting to reach and withdraw from it. Get it to reach and withdraw from him. You may turn it on again. There might be some little residual down there. And if you're exteriorized, real good, you can make the body reach and withdraw from it. In other words, the energy deposits interoperate, and you can see exactly what's happening there. It's quite an interesting mechanism. The other thing I want you to get a good idea of today, there's two brutal things. That's one of them, reach and withdraw, because you figured out for a long time that you've gotten rid of your epigluteus and you run reach and withdraw toward it and there's some of it left. And for a moment or two it's real rough going and then it turns off the rest of the way. There's just an old piece of facsimile stuck around there someplace that you had a ridge, wound up in a ridge and it went into action again. And the other one is, again, formula H. Please see if you can find the glee of insanity in yourself. I'm pretty clear. Just do it long enough to find the glee of insanity. When exteriorized, get the matching beams of reach and withdraw. You know, must reach but can't reach, must withdraw but can't withdraw.